Are you between 14 and 30 years old and interested in organizing a French language activity for youth in your community? The VIF program can make it happen. You could receive $850 to create your activity, and your partnering organization could get $150 to support it. Bring your idea to life. Visit programvif.ca and apply today.
Opera, theater, orchestra, dance. Live arts can move you like nothing else. And there's no better time to rediscover the romance, embrace the emotion, and reignite your passion for the spectacular. Join the audience and experience the drama, the music, and the people. Come to life. For events near you, visit explorelivearts.ca. Supported by Prairies Economic Development Canada.
Good evening and welcome to Art World Innovators, exploring stories of innovation in the art world. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba.
Our guest this evening is Lucia Pisani, a highly accomplished multimedia artist working in clay, films, sculptures, textiles, and photography. She was born in Caracas and is currently based in London. Lucia graduated with a BA in Communication Studies from Universidad Católica Andrés Bello in Caracas, a certificate in Conservation Biology from CERC at Columbia University in New York, and a Master's in Fine Arts from the Chelsea College of Art and Design in London. Lucia's works may be found in various private and public collections, such as Fundación Eugenio Mendoza in Venezuela, the Tate Museum in the UK, and Magazine 3, Museum of Contemporary Art in Stockholm. Recent collaborations and commissions include featured artist at Frieze London in the Smoke Section, performative lecture for Seeds, a public program at the Serpentine Gallery in London, and Casawabi and the Puerto Escondido Botanical Garden in Mexico. She's had numerous national and international solo and group exhibitions, such as Morada Vegetal at Abra in Caracas, Rites of Seeds and Refuge at Cecilia Brunson Projects in London, Peckham 24 Photography Festival in London, and Museum of Contemporary Art in Chile, among many others. Lucia has been featured in many magazine and media, such as Art Forum, BBC News, and Art Nexus. She's been a guest lecturer at Leeds University, Sotheby's Master's Program, and Venezuela Institutes. Lucia has received many awards and bursaries, including the Arts Council England grants for the arts, and artist residencies, such as Hangar in Barcelona. Lucia's first monograph was published in October 2024. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're an accomplished and innovative artist working in a variety of materials. Would you like to share a bit about your early background experiences and what drew you to become an artist?
So, yes, my childhood was surrounded by art. Both my parents are artists. My dad worked with painting, and my mom was one of the first women working in contemporary video art in Venezuela. The first artist in the 80s, and I was taking part in her works. So even performances, videos since an early age, around 7 years old. But then growing up in a place like Venezuela, so biodiverse and with such an amazing array of landscapes, everything that we were visiting, it really gave me this route to try and do things for the environment there. I was prompt to respond to reading texts of environmentalists and since an early age as well. So I ended up studying, as you say, visual communications, also because in a way I wanted to do my own journey. And I worked for Provita, an environmental organization, for many years in Venezuela. And we did many projects in the Andes, in the Amazon. We had a project in Isla de Margarita. And I was doing, of course, things related to visual, like photographs for publications, but even creative projects like with artists and art and ecology, all this. And then finally, when I moved to New York in my early 20s, I was able to be on my own and rediscover this interest for the arts. My first projects happened in New York. I exhibited at Exit Art that had a project before in Canal Street when the area was so different. It was not full of shops, but imagine art spaces. Then they moved to Hell's Kitchen. And in a way, having these positive responses when I was sending my projects and the doors were opening for me, also the Queen's Museum. I was part of one of the first editions, I think the third one, Queen's Biennial. at the Queen's Museum. I had the chance also to study conservation biology at Columbia. That was a degree of 1 year, especially for people who came from different backgrounds to go more in depth. So all of this was happening at the same time, like me having more independence and being able to be on my own without being the daughter of these two artists and experimenting with this ecology and art more and more. And then I think for the last 20 years, it's been visual arts, but of course, with a lot of interest still in the environment and organic materials and community projects.
Can you tell us about your academic training and how this multidisciplinary, multicultural combination has been most valuable to you in your practice?
In a way, all the works have this background of one career that I was following. And then in my 30s, if there was a change of path in a way. But without that, I would not be doing the work that I do now. So in Venezuela, the BAs last 5 years. We do 3 years of, for example, written journalism, art history, or the history of the country, communications, literature, all of these things. In the last 2 years, you get to choose either PR, written press, or visual. And mine was visual for the last 2 years. And that was basically film, photography, radio. So the use of sound, the use of working in this collaborative way where I did work for some months in the film industry. And then you see how much of an effort of a group is to make a work. And that's very different from the solitary artist in the studio. But I think even nowadays, I carry this way of working when I call collaborators for sound or when I do performances. I usually either do it with, for example, Luzmira Serpa, who's an amazing singer and songwriter from Venezuela, or I've been also working with Javier Weyler, who's a musician and composer. I tend to interact with other artists, and I think that this is a very rich way of working that I have also maybe inherited from these early days with my mother and all these artists in Venezuela in the 80s, and then in the film industry in Caracas. So I think all of these experiences, they teach you many things that then you can use. And also, for example, being able to write is such a gift after having studied journalism. So I enjoy writing about my work, or even at some point I was doing reviews for magazines in Venezuela when I moved to London. So I think there are tools, no, and experiences and different ways of seeing the world, like research, for example, how a journalist do research. And for me, I think also the research is very important. In every time I go to a residency or I do certain exhibition, there's a lot of digging and trying to find out what's happening, what's the story of the place, and that will enrich the final result.
Would you like to tell us about the recent sculptural installation, The Tale of the Eye and the Snake, and the performance that you did for Frieze London? And maybe walk us through that creative process from initial ideas and research.
This is a good example because it's a project that started responding to Regent's Park and the history of this site. And then I thought, okay, I want to do sculpture, but go beyond. So it's a full project that started with this idea of writing three tales, the tale of the eye, the snake, and the seed. Because, of course, there are very ancient symbols that go across geography and time. And I was very lucky to work with Lucia Pietrojusti, who is a curator who was the head of ecologists at the Serpentine for many years. We have collaborated in different ways. She also did a beautiful text for my monograph. So we said, okay, let's imagine these three entities in a forest full of oaks, because of course, Regent's Park was a forest, was a different kind of place. Now it's also incredible to think that this Regent's Park has a zoo, for example. When this writing became then a sound piece and we were around doing the field recordings, and we even had, for example, monkeys in the recording that came from the zoo. So it is a place that many people enjoy. And I have to say that also London is a very green city. People tend to talk about the rainy days here, but it's also a very green city. And I realized that even more during COVID, because there were so many places where you could go for a walk and breathe. And in this project, we started by doing this almost very intuitive way of writing, where Lucia was writing one paragraph and I was replying with another one. And then between the two of us, we created these new tales of the entities, like the eye being the presence and almost the awakening for the other two, the snake more related with transformation and healing, and the seed, the place of birth. I always work with this shape of the oval that for me is both the eyes, the mouth, but a vulva or a seed. It's a place of birth. These three works were made with ceramics and steel to be almost sprouting out of the grass in Regent's Park. And that was last year. The show is longer than the art fair because nobody's going to do all this work just for a weekend or a few days. So I stayed in the park for a month and a half, and we were able to activate the works through performance. Then I also did special dresses that are almost like wearable paintings, where each one of us was Lucia Pietrojusti, and the other collaborator was Luzmila Serpa that I was mentioning. And she also brought a lot of input into the project about, for example, which instruments or sound we could have for these activations and her own views on these very deeply rooted symbols. Now I'm very happy to share that the work has traveled to Cornwall and is now installed at the Tremenier Sculpture Garden along artists like James Turrell, Richard Long. So it's such a beautiful subtropical place with palm trees. It's going to be open from February 14th. They were closing for the winter and now they reopen. There is a big history in that area because it's super close to St. Ives. So you have the Barbara Hepford Studio, the Tate St. Ives, and there's still a very active art scene in the area. And I've been doing more and more things outside of London, which gives you a different perspective and you get to meet other people and different ways of living. So that's been very interesting too.
Going back to the recent installation for Frieze, what were you hoping your audience would take away from this work and experience?
Yeah, so there were different ways to experience the work. You had these three sculptures standing there, standing still, but there was a QR code, so people could click there and hear the sound piece that's 7 minutes long. And if you devoted a bit more time, you will be hearing all these sounds like waterfalls that come from the different fountains in the park, insects, winds. Things are very subtle. Others is, of course, the text that we wrote and then recorded. So it depending on how much involved was the audience, if you're just passing by, if you want to stop and listen for a bit, or if you were able to be in one of the activations. So we did three performances across the month and a half. And the last one, in a way, was the most intimate because people got closer. We learned from the previous ones that we wanted the audience to get closer to us and to start sharing in a way where they could even sing with us and do this thing that you do, like call and response, that Luzmila was pushing for that direction. And people enjoyed it in a different way. One thing that Lucia said in one of our meetings, she said that people, you know, us as humans, the ways where we are really, really sharing in a deeper level is almost when you eat and when you sing. There are special moments because you feel like you're all part of something all together. So I think this was the idea, to experience it in different ways, but to reflect on life, on ecology, on symbols, what symbols mean to us. And also this idea that ancient tales, they always come from us, in a way, from observation. And also, I don't think that you need to have such a disconnect between science and ancestral beliefs, for example, because in a way, there is information as well in all of these beliefs or traditional medicine or ancient tales or legends or myths. So it's a way to bridge both of them. And through art, through sculptures, through interactions, conversations, sound, there's so many ways that the work can impact you or open some dialogues.
You've mentioned that you do a lot of research and experiment a great deal in your practice. Can you tell us about a few pivotal discoveries and installations or projects during your practice and how these may have changed or impacted your artistic sensibilities?
I'm very drawn to history, for example, and a few years ago, I started to visit different caves, the Lascaux Caves, the Chauvet Caves, and also my trips to Mexico that have been very mind-blowing, that culture, the whole Mesoamerican civilization. In Venezuela, we had the Caribbean indigenous people who had their own ways, but they were nomads and it was different. So I think every time I do these trips where I can open almost a parenthesis in time and dedicate my life to go out of the domestic and the everyday and just visit places, talk to people, read, research. In particular, the one with the caves and all the prehistoric knowledge has given me almost like a confirmation about this importance or how deeply rooted these symbols are, like the vulva, the snake. There was a moment that people didn't even understand how women were getting pregnant. And they had all these ideas of the underworld or the snake being a conduit between these unknown worlds or parts of our life were not easily explained through science. I think nowadays we have acquired almost this superpower of looking inside things. Like one of the worst ideas was these cocoons. Women were trapped in cocoons and they were trying to almost free themselves. But now we can even see through the cocoon and see what's happening there, how this organism will melt and become something completely different, like radical change. So, and now what I'm preparing is an exhibition where with a deep time perspective, where I'm looking about themes of climate change or migration in the coast of England. I was telling you that I was in Cornwall, but I was also doing research in Plymouth, and the other exhibitions happening in Southend. In Essex, it's going to tour to Plymouth and then to Wales. So this whole project is connected. And in a way, it's also connected to the residency I did in France at the Launchpad Lab when I visited these caves. So it's like you are a human being that start to thread your life and then things get intertwined or one project inform the next. So discovery is always there, no? I think for me, it has to do a lot with the residencies and with time for research.
Can you describe your studio and how this may enhance your work and creativity?
Yeah, so I have been at Gasworks a year and a half now. So Gasworks is a place where there is a mix of local London artists with international residents. So it's a super interesting community where every 3 months you have a new group of 4 or 5 artists coming from different parts of the world and you get to meet them, visit their studios and make new friends. And also the London group is super nice. So I'm in the studio here, as you see it. I work collage, paper, research. Now I'm working with canvas. All of this happens here. And I also now have a different place where I can do my ceramics because ceramics is so messy and you need the kilns and different tools and instruments. So I live in South London near Brixton, which in a way is almost like a mirror of my own multicultural upbringing in Venezuela with all the syncretic culture. And I have my studio of ceramic in Brixton, and then Gasworks is just 20 minutes from there. So based in South London, and also before joining the studio artists here, I also did some workshops for them because they have outreach program for the Latin American communities here. So that's also been very nice. And you really feel part of a community when you interact with these mothers and then suddenly you are in a bus and they are in the same bus and you and the kids go to the same school. So that's also beautiful when you do things in your local area that ground you in this way, no?
You've been to a number of artist residencies in various cities and cultures. Can you tell us a little more about where you've been and your projects and some of the people you have met?
I think one of the first ones I did was in Barcelona in a place called El Hangar. And this is when I won this very important award in Venezuela called Premio Mendoza. And so I was awarded the residency there to prepare a solo show for that institution in Caracas, who is actually one of the oldest of the cities, more than 70 years old, I think. So in Barcelona, for example, I started to work with collodion wet plate that were very old techniques from Victorian times where you put the emulsion on an aluminum plate and the image will reveal itself there. So almost like a daguerreotype. It was such a privilege to work with this group of people who had the studio and all the tools. And I ended up using this medium for 2 different projects. And this work that I did produce in 2013 has been acquired by the Tate in 2022. So it's this kind of thing where you never know where the work is going to end up and what's going to happen. But I did this whole project where I was telling you about the cocoon and women and transformation, butterflies. So there are themes that I go back to, either with the snake, the shedding of the skin, protection, armors of animals, and butterflies or cocoons. So in a way, I think nature is always there to surprise you, that you were asking me before about the surprise. And I think nature is crazy. It's unbelievable. The more you read, the more you know. It's things that you wouldn't even imagine. So it's like something coming out of a sci-fi movie, you know?
Would you advise young and established artists to apply and experience these residencies? And how might they apply?
The residencies, you have different types, no? The problem usually is how long can you get away from your job if you have another job that is paying the bills? Or, for example, if you're a mother, like in my case, I have a 15-year-old son and I was not able to do any residencies for a long time because most of them, they just don't take children or there is not the infrastructure, there is not space for families. So I think women in these regards, we are at a disadvantage. Things are starting to change a bit and I see lots of people publishing books or opening dialogues for mothers to be more supported because it's really a big challenge when you have small children to be able to travel and do all this. But the other problem is, of course, is the residency is funded or not. So depending on your situation, I would advise to do residencies, even if it's short. Some of them are just for 2 weeks. The ones here at CASFORCE, they are for 3 months, but they are funded. So people need to apply and then they have a committee who will select. And one thing that I would always recommend to anyone is don't get discouraged by rejections because we all going to have it at some point. And 10 doors can close, but one will open. And it's about perseverance and also just keep on trying and keep on working. And I do always say that this is a very difficult choice or path and requires lots of sacrifices in a way. But I think if this is what makes you alive and you can find ways to make it happen, and there is not one path or one correct way or one way that is the way. And I've seen it because I told you, my parents are artists. So for me, it's not like this myth that the artist is, you know, this god or magician or I don't know. I think all kinds of people can be artists and art can be incorporated in many different disciplines or cross disciplines with other practitioners. And yeah, I will advise just to keep on working and find ways to make it work.
And you've also been working with community groups and lecturing at universities and art schools for some time. Can you tell us about this aspect of your practice and what you find most rewarding about teaching?
Yes, I think it's a very different experience that, in a way, as I was telling you a minute ago about desmythification of, I think in the 80s, you had all these artists that were like the genius, the man in the studio, genius, lonely. And I think nowadays, not everybody, but I've seen that for some people, we have come to the understanding that we need to network, we need to help each other. And that when you do activities where you teach or you do an interactive performance or you go to an art school, everybody's on the same plane level and we all have important and valuable things to give and to exchange. So I've recently given a workshop at the Tate. They did a symposium on ancestral knowledge. And I think the moment where I opened the floor for everybody to say, for example, we asked, what is the meaning of clay? And it was particularly special because they made an effort to bring practitioners from all parts of the world, Asia, Australia, New Zealand, America. And it's still important, even that there is an ecological footprint of people traveling. I think that some points it's important for people to get together in a space, to see each other, to look in the eyes, if it's really something that is going to transcend. And this was a full week of activities. And when I opened the floor and people were discussing their memories and everything, it was so special and really, I was amazed. So I think this way of working that is much more horizontal and is open for sharing, where the artist is not imposing or knows more or less, is the best way for things to progress in the future. This is what I hope.
What is next for you? Any particular projects or commissions?
So I'm working in my first institutional show in the UK, which is called Faunal Succession. I think in English you pronounce Faunal Succession, to be precise. And it's going to open at a place called Focal Point Gallery in South End at the end of March. And I'm very excited that the show gets to tour to an institution called Karst in Plymouth, and then Mostyn in Wales for February 2027. Apart from this, I'm also included this year in the second Climate Biennial in Vienna, which I think is going to be very enriching experience with talks, with all like a public program. I'm also giving a workshop there. But for the show at Focal Point, I'm having this deep time perspective that I was discussing with you a while ago. And it's this idea of the coast as the place to receive migrants, also working with chalk. And the chalk, it's actually made of these millions of bones of very ancient microorganisms. So in a way, this thing of the material telling a story, which I always find very interesting in the way I work. So I started doing these sculptures with chalk, which is a very weird medium because it's brittle and hard at the same time and heavy and porous at the same time too. So I'm creating three environments. One is going to be more with chalk and almost aquatic species where sculptures go from ceramics to canvas, a giant mollusk where you have the hard part, but also the more invisible part, which is called the mantle. It's the steel tongs that you see that come out of mollusks in the beach. So the way I've reimagined this life-size mollusk where the mantle will be made in canvas, for example, and the center will be made in ceramic with different glazes that are blue, that will make you think that if something comes from the water, it's very aquatic, no, in this way. Then there is another space that I call the amber room, and it's going to be all yellow, and it's going to refer to trying to go in depth into this moment where the first vegetation appear on Earth. So it's very interesting things that you maybe never think. It's like, how come we have forest? Because of course the life was originated in the sea, but then how come things start to move out and go in the terrestrial part? There was maybe almost like a little bit of algae or some fragment of vegetation or leaf that were climbing on a rock and little by little start to approach the shore. And then millions of years later, you have a full forest that produces oxygen that allows mammals like us to live. So I've made these ceramic sculptures that have live plants. And I focus in ferns because it's a very ancient species. But I'm also using images of the forest of Turgua, where my father have been living for many years in Venezuela. And I tend to do this thing of overlapping or having all these layers where the South Hemisphere will meet the North. But also when you go back in time, the continents were all together. So it was places that are now the North were closer to the equator. So I'm trying to go back, but also to look at the future with ideas, for example, of water, sea levels, how they were maybe higher and they can become again higher if the climate change effects continue. So there's so many conversations happening around that exhibition. And I'm also grateful to be able to work with groups of migrants. So in Essex, we are doing workshops with a group called Welcome to the UK. And in Plymouth, we're going to do also a workshop with Beyond Borders. So to include all these people and also have even some of the results of the workshop being part of the exhibition, and that makes a stronger relationship where the show becomes also host for artistic expressions of communities.
Well, I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to share your engaging story and valuable insight. And it's been a pleasure seeing you with you, and we wish you continued success.
Thank you. Thank you for the interview, and I hope you enjoy it, and we'll keep in touch.
I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and we thank you for listening to Art World Innovators here on UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Join us again next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. for more on today's innovators in the art world.
Old Gold Vintage Vinyl Record Shop, located at 187 Osborne inside Urban Waves, is Winnipeg's newest and most diverse record shopping experience. Whether you're a veteran collector questing for collectibles and obscurities, or new to the world of vinyl and looking for some classic titles, there's something for everyone at Old Gold Vintage Vinyl. With thousands of titles on LP and 45 in genres spanning rock, soul, funk, jazz, blues, reggae, and more, plus new arrivals being added each week means there's always something to discover. Follow at VintageVinyl204 on Instagram and search for Old Gold Vintage Vinyl Winnipeg on Facebook for the latest on what's new in store. And remember, we're always buying, selling, and trading quality LPs, so call 204-475-2353 or drop by the store at 187 Osborne. Old Gold Vintage Vinyl, because old gold is as good as new.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
For all your sports memorabilia needs, welcome to First Row.
Like we always do about this time.
FirstRow.ca, Canada's online collectible store. Sports cards? We got them. NBA, NFL, MLB, NHL. Autographs, action figures, comic books, and wrestling collectibles. If you're a collector, we got what you need. Remember the name, FirstRow.ca, Canada's online collectibles store.
Hi, this is Jay Arner, and you're listening to UMFM from Winnipeg.
Every night I saw you there in your old wicker chair.